السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. Welcome back to our landmarks of the world. Welcome back to find out more about what's happening out there. What can we Muslims go and visit? What can be discovered from our side? It is the truth that many people nowadays travel. They want to go to the sun. They want to enjoy the beach. They want to see a lot of things actually that they're normally that is exotic or foreign or strange to them. Now, for us Muslims, we are trying to find actually something that reminds us rather of our past or of our present as being Muslims, of Islam. And indeed, one of the regions that is most famous for reminding us of our past is Al-Andalus. Now, Al-Andalus is geographically an area which includes two countries. Actually, it includes three regions. Most and foremost, and most importantly, of course, is the country of Spain, the modern country of Spain, the modern country of Portugal, but also the British territory of Gibraltar. Now, all these three territories, all these three regions, actually, geographically, are the region of Al-Andalus. Now, Al-Andalus itself is not only a geographical region, but also throughout history, it played a role, and it meant a period of time, starting in 711, that's when the famous Berber Tariq bin Ziyad from North Africa arrived in what is nowadays called Gibraltar, in the south of Spain, and finished in 1492. So the period between 711 and 1492, a period of more than 700 years, more than seven centuries, nearly eight, that actually within that period, the Muslims had established rules all over Europe, especially the Mediterranean area. But it went as far as, many people might not know that, as far as Switzerland. So a region such as the Iberian Peninsula, meaning Iberia, the peninsula with two main countries, Spain and Portugal, the area of Gibraltar, which belongs to the UK. Then we move further to France, Switzerland, Italy, the island of Sicily in Italy, Malta, the island of Malta, the island of Crete, and even Cyprus. Now, these are all parts of the world belonging to different countries or being a part of a country, such as the island of Crete being a part of Greece, that once belonged in the period of Al-Andalus. So the chronological period of Al-Andalus. Again, the geographical period of Al-Andalus, which we're going to look into today, is the region of the Iberian Peninsula, which means Spain and Portugal and, of course, Gibraltar. So, Bismillah, let's start straight away, jump into it. Now, Gibraltar, first of all, the name itself indicates that once a certain Tariq bin Ziyad, the Berber from North Africa, had arrived there and took his army, his Muslim army, all the way up to France. Within a small period of time, not even 7 years, a very tiny army for that time, a tiny army of between 4,000 and 7,000, arrived even in the south of France. These people opened the Iberian Peninsula for Islam in the year 711, and since that time, the deen, the faith of Islam, has never left our continent of Europe again. Since that time, it established in different regions and parts of Europe, but it has never left Europe again. Now, that's why it is very important for us to know what happened in that part of the world, which is nowadays called the Iberian Peninsula, where Spain and Portugal can be found. Gibraltar itself, there are quite some landmarks in Gibraltar that can be visited, but we're not going too deep into each one of them because it would definitely not fit the time period that we have for this episode. We're going to discuss Al-Andalus, inshallah. Many people can find out, actually, there is a lot of information on Gibraltar, a lot of information about Spain and Portugal online, but I'm going to give you a very general idea what happened there, why is it important to us, and what, in general, can be found in that part of the world. The Iberian Peninsula itself belonged once to Germanic tribes. That means Germanic tribes were ruling once the Iberian Peninsula. Before it was the Vandals, and then later it was the Goths, Visigoths actually. So now, if you wonder about the name Al-Andalus, where does it come from? How come the Muslims called it Al-Andalus? Now, as we all know, the Arabic article Al-Andalus, if you remember, one of the Germanic tribes that was actually ruling that period, even North Africa, was called the Vandals. So the Vandals, Andals, Al-Andalus, there you can see already how the name derives most probably from there. Now, there are a lot of ideas and a lot of hypotheses where the name comes from, but one of the closest one, the one that is most probably closer to the truth, is the one that we just described, that it most probably comes from the period when the Vandals were ruling that area, the Germanic tribe of the Vandals, which was known and to the Muslims that time. So, in April 711, the North African Berber Tariq bin Ziyad crosses the Straits of Gibraltar, invited by an excluded branch of the local dynasty, assisted by the Jewish community, and by 720 had opened almost the entire peninsula. So, as we mentioned before, Al-Andalus was given the name, in Arabic, of course, and as many people misunderstand, as many people still nowadays in history books and all over the world learn it, they say that basically the Arabs who arrive there, they conquer the Iberian Peninsula up to France. Now again, first of all, as I mentioned before, we're not going to use the name conquer or conquest. We're going to use the Arabic terminology, which describes it more accurately, to open, or the opening basically of the Iberian Peninsula, opening to Islam first. Second, Tariq bin Ziyad was not an Arab ethnically. It did not play a role that time, but it does play a role nowadays. It is important to see that politics are being made nowadays, especially with the big powers in Europe, France, Britain, Germany, especially France in North Africa, because France was the country that was the colonizers that colonized North Africa for a longer period of time, divided these countries, divided the Arab nations in North Africa, and have been telling the Berbers in North Africa that they need a separate state, and have been creating crisis and problems actually in North African societies. Now, the Berbers were are a people who were actually living there before the Arabs arrived. So the Arabs coming from the Arabian Peninsula brought with them their language and Islam. So obviously the language Arabic is important to all of us Muslims, simply because we should not forget the Quran is written in Arabic, not because the Arabic language more important in a way of that it plays a bigger role for us Muslims than Portuguese, Spanish, Italian, Greek, or it is something more special. It is special. What makes it special basically is that it is the language of the Quran. That's it. That's it. That does not mean that other languages, just to make this clear, because people misunderstand the idea, that does not mean that other languages such as Greek, Italian, Spanish, Portuguese, that these languages are less in value, or the people who speak these languages are less in value. No, it just simply means that this Arabic language is used for us all to unite us. We all pray, all Muslims, no matter where they come from, which part of the world, we all pray towards the same direction. That's unity, and we all pray in the same, with the same language. That again unifies us. That's very important to know. And the Quran again unifies us, especially because there is nothing else. Every Muslim in the world has the same Quran. They read, and they read it all in Arabic. So that's why that is important. This has to be made clear, because the colonialists and the modern powers play their role with it, and they play politics with that, basically. So we need to be aware of that as Muslims. Now, what's happening in Al-Andalus? The Iberian, the people, the original people of the Iberian Peninsula were living there, where most of them either Christian or Jews, and they actually celebrated the arrival of the Muslims, the arrival of Tariq bin Ziyad, and most of them supported Tariq bin Ziyad, fighting against the Visigoths and against the Germanic tribes, so whom they saw definitely as conquerors, and they definitely saw them as oppressors. So what these oppressors then did They were losing the battles, of course. Within a short period of time, the Muslims had reached France already. So what was happening? They started creating a typical us and them narrative, saying, we white Christian Europeans fighting them, black Muslim Africans. So they started calling them, instead of Muslims, Moros, which in Spanish means, comes from a Greek term, from a Greek word, Mavros, which means black. So black African people. That's the idea. Them black Muslims, us white European Christians. So this narrative plays a very important role, because even nowadays in the back of the mind of the Europeans, it is still there, that they try to believe that Europe is a Judeo-Christian continent. Until the Second World War, it was basically just a Christian continent. After the Holocaust, they included the Jews as well, so that it has become a Judeo-Christian continent, Judeo-Christian culture, and they're trying to exclude the Muslims and Islam totally out of Europe. But as we can see, 7-11, the beginning of Tariq Ben Ziyad's arrival, the Muslims' arrival, and beginning of Muslim culture in Europe and in Spain for the upcoming 7 to 8 centuries. Now, these Muslims have established a lot. And without the Muslims in Spain and in Portugal, we cannot imagine a Renaissance in Europe. We cannot imagine modern history in Europe, not at all. We have to imagine that these Muslims in Al-Andalus were, of course, originally, many of them came from Africa, as we said, but many Iberian people living there accepted Islam. So the Iberian people, Christians or Jews, accepted Islam, the faith. Some of them didn't do that, but fought on the side of Tariq Ben Ziyad against the Germanic tribes. If we look at the Arabic language that influenced both Spanish and Portuguese significantly, some of the linguists say nowadays between 4,000 and 6,000 words in both languages come originally from Arabic. We should also look at the place names and cities in both Spain and Portugal, which carry Arabic names. For example, Gibraltar, Jibr al-Tariq. So the mountain, the hill, or the rock of Tariq, Tariq bin Ziyad, of course. Medina, the city, of course. Alcala, Guadalajara, Guadalquivir, Algarve. The Algarve in Portugal, meaning Algarve, the west. So there we see, and this is just some examples that I give you, place names that I used in nowadays Spain and Portugal that come originally from the Arabic language. In the 10th century, the city of Granada was at that time the biggest European city and became a great center of silk production. It was a fertile piece of land taking part in the trans-Saharan trade in gold. Cordoba became the intellectual center of the world, where its inhabitants would rather use crystal than jugs to drink from. Now, the Islamic State with its capital in Cordoba ended up splintering into many smaller kingdoms, the so-called taifas, which meant basically that one Muslim emir was fighting another Muslim emir or another Muslim prince on the other taifa, what would all happen within Spanish territory, within Portuguese territory. While Muslim Spain was fragmenting, the Christian kingdoms grew larger and stronger, and the balance of power shifted against the Taifa kingdoms. The last Muslim kingdom of Granada in the south fell to the Christian Reconquista, the Reconquest, in 1492. And that's why I'm saying the period of Al-Andalus started in 711 and finished in 1492. In 1499, the remaining Muslim inhabitants were ordered to convert or to leave. At the same time, the Jews were expelled. And what happened to the Jews? Interestingly enough, many of them decided to leave and to go to the other Muslim pole in the east, basically to the Ottoman Empire. At that time, the Ottoman Empire was established in 1499. There was the opening. It had happened in 1453 already, 40 years before. The Ottomans had opened Constantinople on the other side, and they had accepted easily inhabitants from other parts of the world, especially the Jews coming over from Al-Andalus to live and to construct and to rebuild Constantinople and other parts in the Ottoman Empire. The Arabic language, names and clothing were prohibited, cemeteries and baths were closed. The Muslims who could not afford to leave ended up converting to Catholic Christianity and hiding their Muslim practices, hiding from the Spanish Inquisition until the final expulsion in 1609. The Muslims of Al-Andalus were responsible for many products and ideas that we take nowadays for granted. For example, the toothpaste. We should not forget the miswak, for example, that is now even being producted or sold as a product invented as a new invention. It's basically nothing else that we know as Muslims from the Arab world and from Africa. So the miswak, the toothbrush itself, the toothpaste, alcohol, the guitar, antiseptics, glasses, and much, much, much more. Now, the list is endless, and we could go on and on and on. Important for us to know is that without the Muslims in Al-Andalus, there wouldn't have been the Europe that we know nowadays. There wouldn't have been the development of Europe as we know nowadays. The Renaissance, as I mentioned before already, the restructuring, going back to the ancient Greek and ancient Roman culture and philosophy, because these books from that time, they were saved by the Muslims. Some were rewritten, corrected even, because there were mistakes, obviously, because they were not divine. And some, of course, most of all, they were translated and then corrected and rewritten. Now, the Muslims in Al-Andalus, we can go on. This could be, you know, we could do a recording of a whole day. That's how much information there is about the Muslims of that time. And we can find a lot online. We can find a lot on books. And alhamdulillah, in the English language nowadays, there exists a lot. When I became Muslim nearly 30 years ago, there was not that much about Islam in the world and the spread of Islam in the world, definitely not about history. Al-Andalus, they had started that time. Actually, I remember I read a text in German about Al-Andalus, and I was fascinated. First time I heard something about Muslims being in Spain. I thought there was just some immigrants basically from Morocco coming in, but not at all. There were Spanish Muslims. We had scholars, Al-Qurtubi, for example, scholars that came from Spain that were Spanish Muslims, Portuguese Muslims. Now, I'm putting Portugal and Spain together. Of course, they're independent countries nowadays, and there are a lot of many different things that you can see as a tourist, as a visitor, as a Muslim visitor in that part of the world. But that time, that was all Al-Andalus. That time, it's important to see that the Muslims also saw it as one area, as one region. Portugal became independent shortly, or before Spain became independent. Portugal got the chance and the boost, to be honest, to become a colonial power because of the Muslims in Spain. They couldn't go further into Europe, the Portuguese, so they had to go outside of Europe. They had to leave Europe, and that brought them, of course, to Africa, to South America, and that's what got them to establish the biggest Portuguese-speaking country in the world, Brazil, in South America, of course. And next to this one, five countries in Africa, as well as going into Goa, India, and to other parts of the world. So the Portuguese became the first and biggest, first of all, colonial power due to the Muslims being in Spain on the Iberian Peninsula. This in itself is a massive fact. What can be seen nowadays in Spain and in Portugal is quite a lot. As I said before, we're not going deeper into each one of the landmarks, but the important ones could be the ones in Spain. First of all, Portugal has a lot of castles which were established during the time of the Muslims. The Muslims established the castles and can be still found nowadays throughout Portugal, from the north to the south. Mainly the south of Portugal, there's a lot to see still. Lisbon itself was a city that was established by the Muslims. There is a part which is called Alfama, as we can hear the name in itself. Alfama indicates, of course, that it's of Arabic origin. And any word in a European language starting with Al indicates that it has Arabic roots, because the article Al is typical Arabic, cannot be found anywhere else in a European language. So the Alfama is still the oldest part of Lisbon, where please go and visit it. If you go to Lisbon, go and visit the Alfama. It's a region, it's an area of the capital, which is very beautiful to see, and which gives you the idea of how it looked that time when the Muslims were there. With regards to Spain, obviously, Cordoba, clearly the La Mezquita, the mosque, the famous mosque of Cordoba can be seen, which you need a whole day to go through, to enjoy, to just try to imagine what it looked like during the time of the Muslims. Now, nowadays, you are not allowed to pray in the Mezquita. It used to be like this, that groups, Muslim groups, even school groups coming from Morocco, from other parts of Europe, they would be able to just go into a corner and pray. But nowadays, there are cameras all over. Don't attempt to pray because they will keep you away from it. Anyway, the point is that Cordoba, as the capital of the Muslim state that time, played a very important role. And still nowadays, you can find, you can understand how it looked that time and the importance that it played that time. Just go through the through the aisles of Cordoba, and you will find you will feel yourself that you are somewhere back in the time of Al-Andalus, and you will understand hopefully what it looked like that time. The next city, Granada, of course, Granada with the Alhambra, the massively important landmark, has to be again visited. A whole day at least, take the whole day off for that. Make sure that you buy your ticket online long before you go there. Do not do it on that day. You will have no chance to get a ticket on that day. Do not do it even in that month that you're going. Do it months before, a month in advance, before you go there. The Alhambra, of course, fantastic to go and see. The palace that the Muslims built that time, extremely interesting, extremely important to go and visit and to see, to understand the glamour of the Muslims that time, how it was during the time of Islam in Spain and in Portugal and the Iberian Peninsula. Seville, or Sevilla in Spanish, the city where you can go and visit La Giralda, which was once a minaret. If you go and see that, again, it will give you a better idea of how the Muslims used to live, or how it used to be under Muslim rule in the Iberian Peninsula. Now, Sevilla has become a big city where the modern life has taken over, so you would have to go to specific places to understand what it looked like during the time. But all over the province of Andalusia nowadays, so there is a province in the south of Spain which is called Andalusia. All over that province, you will be able to discover Islamic architecture, Islamic influence. As I said, even the language, Spanish, has more than 4,000 Arabic words. And you will be able, if you learn Spanish, to feel the soul of these people, mashallah. It's beautiful, absolutely amazing to see that. We're not going to go deeper into that. I mean, as I said, we could, of course, spend more than hours actually on the topic, but I want you to go to look deeper into it. It gave you an idea, I think, I hope, about the history of the Iberian Peninsula, of Al-Andalus, as it was called at that time, of the province of Andalusia. The province of Andalusia is just a province in Spain nowadays. That is not Al-Andalus, as people mistake it again. The whole of Spain nearly and the whole of Portugal were once part of Al-Andalus. So you can find architecture even in the north of Spain. You will find the influence of Islamic architecture even in Catalonia, Barcelona, and the whole of Catalonia, actually, you will be able to find Spanish Islamic influence on Spain without a doubt. Well, I wish you to have a nice trip, have a nice holiday. Whoever wants to go on holiday, do it. Take your children, go and visit that very important part of Europe. Go and visit and find out how glorious our history once was. Jazakumullah khair. See you and hear you, inshallah. Speak to you next time, inshallah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. In order to find more about myself, Dr. Steph Karis, and my work, you can simply follow me on my social media sites, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. And if you want to become a patron, just take a look at my site, stephkaris.com. Find out that it's not difficult to just support my projects through my Patreon site. And I would like to thank you for your interest. Jazakumullah khair. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.